going to learn Daf Mem Hei in Masechtas Nedarim. So the sugya on Daf Mem Hei, right at the top of the Amid, really is a second teret to a question that the Gemara posed on Daf Mem Dalet. So what did the Gemara Mem Dalet say? We'll just go through that quickly, and then we'll get to the second teret over here. So the Gemara Mem, we're going back on the Mishnah, back on Mem Gimel, where the Mishnah discussed the halacha if two people are going on a trip, just them by themselves, and one of them makes a neder that he's not going to give the other person hana, and now all of a sudden person number two doesn't have any food and he needs food or drink or whatever it is. So the Tanakhama proposes and says, okay, I'll just make it hefker, and the other guy will pick it up off the rock, or pick it up off the side of the road. And Rabbi Yossi says that's usur. So the Gemara on Daf Mem Dalet and Mem Gimel and Beis and Mem Dalet spends a lot of time trying to figure out why does Rabbi Yossi hold that it's usur. So Rabbi Yochanan explains, right after the Mishnah, Rabbi Yochanan explains because hefker is similar to matana. And this is a very important point because this is what we're going to discuss today. So he says it's very similar to matana in the sense that just like a matana, until the object leaves, or rather, until the object is received by the recipient, as what we refer to as the taker, then it is still in the reshus of the giver. So there is no, so to speak, in-between shita. There is no in-between status. That's Rabbi Yochanan's chiddush. That is really going directly from the giver to the taker, to the donator, to the recipient. So the problem with that is that if I made a neder that I'm not allowed to give him hano, that would be violating the neder, because the person making the neder, or the person prohibiting, would be giving directly to the person who's receiving, and that's not allowed. Now again, the Tanakhama Shita is not concerned by that, because he holds, and that's actually important to note, he holds that the way hefker works is that there is this interim status, where the donator, so to speak, removes himself from the object, and therefore he has nothing to do with the object anymore, and when the person who's receiving it takes it, he's taking it from nowhere, from the ether. He's taking it from out there. So therefore there's no problem with that. Okay, so that's what our Mishnah said. The problem is we had two brises that contradict each other, and this is what we're going to give the answer to. So the two brises, without going into all the variations of the brises, well, one brisa started off by saying that whenever somebody makes something hefker, it's hefker for 3 days. It's not really hefker for 3 days. And no matter what happens during the first 3 days, when he's mafker a field, it's not really considered hefker, because we realize that people don't really make it. It's not a real hefker. They're only making it hefker to try to circumvent and get away without paying meiser, because once a field is hefker, you don't have to pay meiser on it. That's what the beginning of the brisa says. The end of the brisa says, no, if I make it hefker for a period of time, so then, as long as nobody takes it, I can always retract during that period of time. But if somebody takes it, the deal is over, which means including even the first 3 days. So we said, what's the difference between them? And here's where we finally get to our contradiction. So we have two ways to answer it. Ula says we can answer it, the whole Mishnah is really according to the Rabbanon, and according to the Rabbanon it's really hefker, so it's not a problem. It's just the Rabbanon that say that we're going to wait on it 3 days. And Reish Lakish answers that it's really the whole Brisa is going according to Rabbi Yossi, which remembers the same Rabbi Yossi as our Mishnah, and he says really it's not really hefker, because they didn't really mean to give it away, and Rabbanon say after 3 days we're going to make it hefker anyway. We're going to consider it hefker after 3 days, because eventually you have to consider it hefker. Great. That's brisa number one. Brisa number two, which is the contradiction, is it says that if somebody makes his field hefker at night, and then the next morning he goes and he starts collecting, it happens to be talking about a vineyard over there, so he starts collecting his grapes in the morning, so we say that he's still putter from meiser. Now, here's the problem. If we just said, according to Ula, it's not a problem. According to Ula, that says the Brisa previously was talking according to the Rabbanon. There is really a concept of hefker, and it really is a hefker. As long as we know that it's a really hefker, I understand why we consider it potter mina meiser, because mida araisa, it really is potter mina meiser, because it really was hefker. The Rabbanon don't like it because of the Ramoim, so they kind of pull back a little bit so that you're chayiv and meiser anyway. But there is a concept, midaraisa, it really is potter. So according to that according to Ula, there is no contradiction in the Brisa. But according to Rabbi Yossi according to Reish Lakish that says the first Brisa is talking according to Rabbi Yossi, and according to Rabbi Yossi, it never really is Hefker. It never really is Hefker. So then why would you use the terminology that it's Potter Min HaMaaser? Why would you say that? It's really not Potter Min HaMaaser. There's no Potter Min HaMaaser on any level. The Rabbanan, certainly not the next morning. Because midaraisa, it's not potter, because that's not the way hefker works according to Rabbi Yossi, and it's within the first 3 days, so it's also not going to be considered hefker. Even on a derabbanan level, we're not going to consider it hefker. So there's no din of hefker whatsoever. So how do you explain the brisa? So the Gemara right at the bottom of Mandal and Mabez gave the first teretz. The first teretz was, you're right, and Anachanami, these two brises are really a contradiction. Our brisa before we answered according to Rabbi Yossi, this brisa has to be going according to the rabbanan that say that there is a concept of hefker that works, at least on a daraisa level it works, and that's why this brisa is saying that you're potter min HaMaaser, you're potter min HaMaaser midaraisa. And Anachanami, midarabbanan, the fact that you're taking back the field within 3 days makes it that it wasn't really hefker, and we're going to obligate you in giving Maaser, but at least on a Daraisa level, it was real Hefker. Okay, now, that brings us, I know that was a long introduction, but that finally brings us to where we are, to where we're up to on the top of Memhei and Ma'av. Ibo Yisemo. So now, starting to read the Gemara. The Gemara is giving a second teretz. Remember, the second teretz is to answer the contradiction between the two brisos, according to Rabbi Yossi. This answer really works according to everybody, but even particularly according to Rabbi Yossi, that how is it that this brisa says that you're going to be, there is a concept of hefker. And finally, the Gemara gives actually a rather simple teretz. Ibo yisei mahoda afkere ba'anpe train, mahoda afkere ba'ape tloso. It depends. When I made hefker, who was there? Who heard me say that it was going to be hefker? It depends on whether there's two people there or three people there. And the way the Ran learns, Ran has a very interesting explanation. He learns that the difference between two and three is that when you say it to two people, you're really trying to hide the ball. You're not really making it hefker in a way that anybody should know that it is hefker. And therefore, that's where the Rabbanon kick in and say, well, this is not really, that's where Rabbi Yossi says it's not really a hefker, and it really goes back, it reverts back to the owner, and we view it as if it's going from one person, from the giver to the taker. However, when you make it hefker in front of three people, then it's already kind of, so to speak, out there in the world. Three people, I don't know if you want to consider it a bezdin, but even if you don't want, the Ran doesn't really say that, but if you want to, the Ran says it's because one person takes and the other two people are able to testify that he took it, so then it's a real hefker. So the answer to the brisos is very simple. The brisa on Mem Dalet Amud Beis that talked about the fact that it is hefker is talking about where there are three people there. Then it's a serious, then the person really means to say that it's going to be hefker. Whereas all the other, our Mishnah and the previous brisa is talking about where there's less than three people, maybe two. And clearly, our Mishnah is talking about where there's less than three because that's the whole scenario. The whole scenario was that it's only me and the other guy, and that was the problem. How do I get it to him? Because if there was anybody else there, I would give it to the other person, and the other person would distribute it to the guy in need. So Elamai, so that's why our Mishnah says that it's not really a good hefker because I only did it with two people. And now once you say this teretz, so now you don't have to come on to all the other terutzim that you could say. So, well, let me say it the other way around. Once you say that by three people it's a real hefker, it comes out that even according to Rabbi Yossi, who says it goes from the giver to the taker, will agree that if there are three people here, that's really removing yourself. That's a real hefker, and even Rabbi Yossi will agree that it's hefker to the world and it's not in his rishus anymore. So you're not going to have any of these problems anymore. Okay, so that's the teretz. Very simple teretz. It depends on how many people are there. Once I say it's in front of three people, that's a real hefker. It's really out of my rishos. Now, where do we see this concept? The Gemara continues. Damar Rabbi Yochanan, Mishum Rabbi Shimon ben Yoyit Tzadok. He says it very clearly. Kol hamafker b'fnei shloisha. Anybody who makes something hefker with in front of three people, in the presence of three people, have a hefker. That's really a real hefker, as we just described, even according to Rabbi Yossi. B'fnei shnayim loy have a hefker. In front of two people, it's not considered hefker because then the guy's trying to, as we said, try to hide the ball. He's not really trying to make it hefker. He just wants two people to hear it so he could say, oh yeah, I made it hefker. But he really doesn't want anybody to know about it, and he's not really making it hefker. If at all, by the way, the Ran does point out something interesting. If at all, he was trying to make it hefker for those guys. in other words, he was trying to say that those two people that he's saying it to, they can go and take it. But that's not what we consider hefker. We consider hefker that it's free, that it's out, that it's no man's. But if you only say it to two people and the expectation is one of those two people are going to take it, that's not what we, how we understand the concept of hefker. So very simple teretz. Now we have, to finish off the perek, the Gemara brings another sheet to just explain what the difference between two and three is. He says, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, he says, no, the way to explain it is like this. Devar Torah afilu be'echad have hefker. Really, even one person is hefker, because, and I'll give you the simplest example, we do this all the time, even by ourselves, we make our chametz hefker on Erev Pesach, right? So hefker works, you don't need, midaraisa, you don't need anybody else there. Really, midaraisa, even one person is have hefker, it's hefker. Umatam omru b'shloisha, so why did we say that if you really want to be serious about your hefker, you should always make sure to have three people there, kedei she'e echad zoicha b'shnayim e'idim, so that one of the people, when he picks it up, will have another two witnesses there to prove that, to testify that as evidence that he really that the third person picked it up. So the reason why you're requiring three people is really just for the long run, so that nobody can ever object to what happened over here. But really, even one person is going to be is going to be a hefker, and that's the way all the Rishonim Paskin, the Rishonim Paskin, like Rabbi Shmuel ben Levi, that one person is going to be hefker, and you only need the three people for testimony and proof, and so on and so forth. And that's why, as I said before, that's why, for example, when you make something hefker Erev Pesach, it's considered really hefker. You don't need three people in order to say it hefker. But just to repeat, the purpose of this teretz was that even according to Rabbi Yosi, who says that hefker works, that it's going, that it seems to mimic the way you go from a matana, the way you give a matana, which is directly from the giver to the taker, says when it comes to three people, even Rabbi Yosi will agree you don't need that formality, because once you have three people there, then in fact you are removing yourself and you're already giving it away to the rest of the world right now on the spot. Okay, so Hadron Aloch Ein Bein Hamudar. Now we're going to start the fifth parak of Maseches Nedarim on the top of Mem Hei Amud Beis. And it's very simple. We're just going to read the first half of the Mishnah. Not even the first half, the first few lines of the Mishnah. Mem Hei Amud Beis only has three lines, but we're going to learn one or two lines into the Mem Vav Amud Aleph, and then we'll explain. So the next Mishnah talks about a very interesting case. We'll read the Mishnah itself. Hashutvin shenodru hanozem mizet. So you have two partners that own a piece of property, just to keep it simple. They own a piece of property. And now they went ahead and they said, I'm not letting you have hanoah from me. And the other guy says, I'm also not letting you have hanoah from me. Right? You could see how this could happen. One guy says, I'm not giving you anything. And the other guy says, well, then I'm not giving you anything either. Now, actually, what I'm already saying is the machlekes rishonim, the way I just said it, is actually a machlekes rishonim. But I'll just stick with that for a second and read the Mishnah, and then I'll explain what I'm talking about. So then, the halacha is, according to the Tanakh, come again. The case is that we each made each other usher to eat. We said we're not giving hanoah to the other person, and it happens to be that we're partners, right? You can see how this partnership is really falling apart. So the halacha is asurin likanes l'chatzar. So they owned a piece of property together. Neither one of them is allowed to go into the chatzar. That's the Tanakh Mishita, because I said, I have hanoah from my portion, and I own a portion of this property. Rav Elozim and Yaakov Omer, he says very simple. No, zen nichnas l'toich shaloi. Each I can go into. One goes into his property, and the second one goes into his property. Now, obviously, that point is that we can define his property as wherever he goes as his property. And that's the explanation that we're going to add in 1 second. But let's just add one more sentence now on the top of Mem Vav Amud Aleph. V'shnehen asurin lahamid reichayim v'tanar legadol tanar goyim. Okay, we'll stop with that sentence. Which means, and both of them, even regardless of whether you hold it's mutter or usser to walk into the field, even if you hold that you are allowed to, meaning like Rav Elozim and Yaakov, that you're allowed to walk onto the field, you're certainly not allowed to place a mill or an oven or to raise chickens on the field. So in other words, to use the property in a way that you're putting something on the property. Meaning, the point of the compare and contrast that this sentence says to this sentence versus the first sentence, which is actually important to understand the first sentence, because as we'll explain in a moment, is that in the second sentence, you're actually using the property. You're putting an oven there. And it was very common, and under normal circumstances, the halacha is that if me and, you know, two people own a property together, that one of the two is allowed to put an oven, right? They used to bake outdoors. It was very hot. They didn't have air conditioning. So they used to put their big heavy ovens outside so that it wouldn't heat up the whole house. So it was mutter for any one of them to put an oven on the property. We own it together. I'm allowed to put, that would be permitted. But because of the fact that we made a neder that I'm not allowed to give you hano, and therefore you're not allowed to use my property, you're not allowed to use the property in that sense. You're not allowed to put an oven, put a rechayim, put a mill, or raise chickens, because that would actually be using the property. Now, let's get back to the first half. Of the first half of the sentence. As opposed to, so what's the machlokes Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov and the Tanna Kamma? They're arguing simply about walking through the property. We're talking about whether it's permitted to even, for them to even go into it. So imagine you have a house, a duplex, and there's a front entrance, which has, you know, the front entrance, which has a staircase up and a staircase down. One of them lives down, one of them lives up. And they have, like, this little, I don't know what it's called, the mud room. They have a little mud room right in the front door. That's a lobby that they both own. And each one of them says, I don't want to have anything to do with you, right? The neighbors are angry at each other. I don't want to have anything to do with you. So this would be, imagine that case, where it's a tiny little mudroom in the front of the house, and neither of them is allowed to walk in. You're not even allowed to walk into that mudroom, according to the Tanna Kamma. According to Rebbe Elazar, he says you could walk in. So that happens to be a very good example, because, first of all, the first thing that we have to know is that the Ran says that we're talking about a chotzer, a courtyard, which is too small to split. See, if it was large enough to split, and generally speaking, that too small means that we're talking about it's less than dalet by dalet, it's less than 4 amos by 4 amos, because once a property is bigger, big enough to split, and we have this situation where they're not having enough from one another, we just say, you know what, guys, let's split, let's build a wall. So imagine if the mudroom was actually large enough to put a wall in between them, so the, you know, one guy would go to the left, one guy would go to the right, and that would be that, and then they wouldn't have this issue. We're talking about where it's really a small room, and there's nothing, you cannot split it in half. It's not sellable for half of that property. So that's point number one that we're talking about. Okay, now point number two is, what's the explanation? What's the machlokes between Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov and the Tanna Kamma? So the Gemara itself, in Baba Kamma, believe it or not, quotes this Mishnah, and it says the explanation to this machlokes is whether we hold of Yesh Breira or Ein Breira. So just very briefly, what is Yesh Breira, Ein Breira? So now, the Ran spends a lot of time explaining what Yesh Breira and Ein Breira are, or different variations of it. But generally speaking is, when two people own something, Yesh Breira and Ein Breira is not limited to the concept of ownership, by the way. Just so that you understand, I'm using this as an example. When two people own something, they don't know which piece is mine, which piece is yours. Let me give you an example just to illustrate the point. Imagine we have a partnership where our business is to rent out cars. We own a, you know, enterprise. We own a car rental place. And there's 50 cars. And there's two partners. We don't say to each other, okay, you own the blue car, I own the red car. We both own it together. But if you hold Yesh Breira and eventually we split the car dealership and you take half the cars and I take half the cars, so then, very nice. So now I can define and say, okay, you get the blue, I get the red. And we can split the cars very simply. And so if you hold of Yesh Breira, so now back into the context of what we're talking about. If you hold of Yesh Breira, that means that you can say that really all along I always owned the blue cars and you owned the red cars, even though we were operating together as a partnership and we were doing everything together. But it really is now defined as I always owned the blue car and you always owned the red car. That's if you hold Yesh Breira. Means that now that you've defined it, you can go back and look retroactively and say that that's the way it was. That's the way it was all along. We just didn't know it. Okay, whereas if you hold Ein Breira, you say, no, If we're splitting today, then today is the first time that you're taking the blue and I'm taking the red. And then, and finally today we know what's what. But that doesn't mean yesterday that you owned what you're taking today. That means yesterday we still owned everything together. Okay, so that is the, again, the simple explanation on what Yesh Breira is and Ein Breira. And it can be talking about, as the Ran goes through many examples, some of them have nothing to do with ownership of property. Some of them have to do with karbonos. There's different scenarios where Breira, Yesh Breira, Where, for example, I'll give you an example that we learned many years ago in Erevin, where we learned the fact that if, let's say somebody wants to make an Erev, and you can only make an Erev Tchumen, right, so that you're able to walk 2,000 Amos in one direction. So you're only able to pick one direction. You can't make an Erev in two opposite directions. But you haven't decided yet which way you want to go. So just in case, Erev Shabbos, I set up an Erev in one direction, and I set up an Erev in the opposite direction, and tomorrow on Shabbos I'll decide. Tomorrow on Shabbos I'll decide. So if you hold Yesh Breira, so tomorrow when I decide, we'll say, oh yeah, that's what I meant all along. On Erev Shabbos, when I set it up to the east, I always meant it really to the east. I didn't know it at the time, but now I know that really that's always what I meant. As opposed to if I hold Ein Breira, I can't make a decision on Shabbos and say, yeah, that's what I meant Erev Shabbos. It's too late. Ein Breira is telling me what I decide now is for now. It doesn't help me. It doesn't look back and say that's what I always meant all along. So I wanted, again, I'm illustrating. I'm just trying to make it clear that the concept of Breira, Yesh Breira, Ein Breira, is not limited to ownership. It's also about events, whether we go back and not go back. In any event, so just to not to belabor the point, but that's the way the Gemara itself wants to explain what the Machlokes is. And the Ran says that is the simple explanation over here. The Rabbanon hold Ein Breira. Now the Ran does add one more level over here to the Yesh Breira Ein Breira. So clearly, just again on the simple level, what we need to walk away with from this Gemara is that the Tanakama Shita is Ein Breira, which means that I don't look at it as as if it's already been predetermined which is mine and which is yours. So since we both own everything together, and you're saying that it's usher for me to go on your property because you're not going to give me hana, so now I can't go anywhere, because who is to say whether where I'm walking is my property or your property? Ein Breira. I don't know which one's mine and which one's yours. Even if we end up splitting in the future, but today I don't know. And therefore the whole field is going to be usher. Whereas Rabbi Moshe ben Yaakov takes a more liberal view, if you want to put it that way. And he says, Yesh Breira, meaning every time I walk on the field, I could say where I am stepping is what I own. And even if I don't know it now, eventually I'll know it, or at the, eventually the Ran himself, in the conclusion of the Ran, he does say that every step that I take at that moment that I take that step, I can clarify and say, well, this step is mine, and the next step is mine, and that's because I hold Yesh Breira, and I'm able to say, even if you don't hold of this Chiddush that it goes retroactively, even if it goes into the future, I'm able to say that each step along the way is considered my step. Is considered my property, so therefore you can't prohibit. You can only prohibit me walking onto your property versus not walking onto your other property. Now, the Ran, as I said before, the Ran does add one other explanation. He also goes into the fact that, the Ran says a few things here, but one on this point, the Ran says that we're talking about that it is that the way it works. So, how does a partnership work? How does a partnership when both of us own the field together work? So there's two explanations. One is that each one of us own 100% of the field. I know that doesn't mathematically make sense. How could we both own 100%? But each one of us own 100%. I own 50% in 100%. I own the whole thing. It's just I only have the rights to 50%. Which means since I own it, I own what I own, that means your field is meshubed to me. What you own, since I own 100%, but I only own 50% of the 100%, your 50% is meshubed, is responsible, is obligated to take care of my 50%. Because I can't own it halfway. I can't, the field doesn't exist if it's less than 100%. But I have rights to 100%. So your field is responsible for me. So that's what Rebbe Lozov and Yaakov holds. The Rabbana hold, no, I don't own anything. It's all a shivud. It's all responsibility. You're responsible for me and I'm responsible for you. I don't actually own anything. This is, so just so that you know, this is the first attempt at the explanation that the Ran gives right at the on the first wide lines of the Ran. And he says, and that's the machlokes, the Rabban, since Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says, I actually own it, I'm able to walk on it, and you're just meshubid. So then you have a question whether then the Ran gets into whether I have the right to prevent you from doing things that I'm obligated to do. Okay, because he brings a very interesting case, which is shocking. Based on this explanation, he says as follows. Let's say I own a piece of property, and I rent it to somebody else. I rented a guy. The guy paid me, you know, he paid me 30 days, he paid me the full rent of the month in advance, and he paid it for me. And then I go ahead and I make a neder, and I say, I'm not giving you hano. I'm not giving you hano. So, if you learn, like the way we just learned, that I have an obligation to give you the field because you paid me for it, but ultimately I'm the owner. I'm still the owner of the property. And if I say I'm making a neder, and my neder is I'm not giving you hana from anything I own, then I could even evict the renter. I could even say, well, sorry, you have no right to be here because I made a neder. And my neder overrides my obligations because that's the whole point of a neder. I might be obligated to do something, but if I have a neder, there's nothing I can do about it. I can't violate my neder, so I have to uphold my neder. So the Ran has a big, based on what this explanation, the Ran is a huge chiddush that it would come out that even if he paid me rent in advance, I can make a neder and say, sorry, you can't use the property. Obviously, I'll have to reimburse him or whatever, but the point is I can evict him just by making a neder, which is a very big chiddush. Rizuran doesn't really like that's the conclusion, but that would be the conclusion. One other thing I'll add on over here. I mean, there's a lot to say. Obviously, there's a long Ran here, but I don't want to keep you. The other thing, the Ran does take one other approach. He brings Rabbeinu Tam. He brings Rabbeinu Tam, which has a completely different explanation that has nothing to do with, it's not, their machlekes is not based on, even though the Gemara does say yesh breyer, ein breyer, but the point over here is that what they're really arguing about is whether we hold a viter is usur or viter is mutter. Now this is a concept that we had much earlier in the Masechta, which is the idea of when I do something, I would do it for anybody. I don't even think about it. I don't even think about it. Like if somebody comes and wants to borrow my pen. Yeah, I don't even think about it. I would let anybody use my pen. I don't start thinking to myself, oh, he's using the ink. I should charge him a penny or 5 pennies or a dime, whatever. I don't think about it. I just let him do it. Or the example I like to give because it fits easier here is, let's say you walk into a bakery with a little kid, a 3-year-old kid. So they give the kid a cookie. Okay? And they say, here's a cookie. They don't even think about it. They just do it. It's one of those things. That's what viter in this context means. That I'm a vater. I waive it. I don't care about it. And therefore, that's what they're arguing about over here as well. So when I say, and this is a general point. This happens to be a machlekes, the machlekes amaroim earlier in the Masechta, whether we hold viter as mutter or viter as us. When I make an isra hana and I say, I'm not giving you anything, do I even mean to include that those extra things that I would do anyway without thinking about it. So if I'm the owner of the bakery and I make a neder that I'm not giving this guy hana, and he walks in and he wants a free sample cookie, am I allowed to give him that free sample or not? So if you hold viter is mutter and you say, yeah, I would do it for anybody, that's not even like giving a hana, because I would do it for anybody, I don't think about it, I don't calculate it, so I could even give it to the guy I made a neder to. But if I say viter is usser, then I say, well, no, that's part of what I'm not allowed. For you, I'm not allowing it, even though I would give it to anybody else without even batting an eyelash, without thinking about it. For you, I'm not allowing. So the Ran wants to suggest, Rabbeinu Tam rather, wants to suggest that that's really the machlekes between the Rabbonon and Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. Because here, what are we discussing? As I said clearly in the beginning when we first started discussing this, that to put an oven or to put something literally physically on the property, that for everybody agrees that's usur. Because that's literally using the property. So what are we discussing? What's our whole discussion here? We're just discussing literally whether he could walk on the property, whether he could walk through it. And walking through, now, for those of you who have a lawn in the front of your house, for example, if somebody takes 2 steps off the sidewalk and starts walking on your lawn, are you going to start running out of your house with a bat and chase him off your land because he's walking over your grass? Okay, so most people, again, I can't speak for everybody, but most people would say, okay, so the guy took two steps on my grass. Big deal. I'm not gonna go crazy because he stepped on my grass. So that's what that's a classic example of vitor. That I don't care. I don't really care. Now, could I put up a fence and say nobody is allowed to keep off the grass? Of course I can. Of course I can insist that nobody walk on my grass. But over here, it's not something that I normally, that under the normal circumstances that people make a big deal about and they insist that nobody touch their grass. So here, that's exactly what we're talking about in our Mishnah. We're talking about walking through the property. So even if I made a neder that I don't want you using my property, when it comes to walking through my property, walking through my portion of the property, I'm not about to make a big deal about it. I'm not gonna prevent you. The Tanakhama Shita says, so the way we're learning is where the Tanakhama Shita would come out that it was saying that a vitor is usser. That even that little bit of something that I don't care about, when I make a neder, I mean to include even that little bit, and it is going to be usser. At the end of the day, we paskin that vitor is usser, and we paskin, the problem is, the reason why we don't hold, the Ran at least doesn't like Rabbeinu Tam's pshat, is because we paskin like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov that it's mutter, and we also paskin that vitor is usser. So there seems to be a contradiction in the way we would paskin, so it doesn't work out, lahalocha, that to explain our Mishnah according to a shita that we really don't hold of in throughout Shas. Throughout Shas, we hold that vitor is usser. So it wouldn't make sense to make that the highlight of the point of the Mishnah here, because it wouldn't work out lahalacha. Anyway, and finally I'll end with this. Lastly, the Ran says that in conclusion he does learn that the machlekes, like the Gemara itself says, in conclusion it is a machlekes whether we hold yesh breira or ein breira. But the Ran says that it's going to be the reason why the Ran is so long over here is because it doesn't line up lahalocha. On the one hand we paskin like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov that it's mutter, and on the other hand we paskin ein breira. So first he wants to make a distinction between breira d'araisa versus breira d'rabbanon. That's some discussion over here, and then ultimately the Ran says that the yesh breira over here is easier to understand than the yesh breira in other cases. Meaning over here, you, as when I first started and I gave you an explanation of yesh breira, I described a yesh breira, which means once I make the decision today, retroactively, then I know that that's the way it was all along. Even though I never thought about it beforehand and I never discussed it beforehand, but retroactively, that's the way it really was all along. Like, for example, just to illustrate the point, like the example of the Erev. I have to make an Erev Shabbos, but I only made my decision on Shabbos. So then I say, retroactively, that's what I meant all along. That's what I meant Erev Shabbos. Even though I didn't say it, that's what I meant. Okay, that would be a retroactive reflection of Yesh Breira. So the Ran over here says, that's not what I need over here. He says, in conclusion, the Yesh Breira over here works even if I hold Ein Breira. In general, this Breira is going to work, and that's why we can pass like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov over here, because this Breira really is, when I bought the property all initially, I always understood that every time I use the property, I'm using my portion. So that's why there is a concept of, it is a Yesh Breira, because I didn't really select when I bought the property. It's not like we split it, you took 50%, you took the left and I took the right. It wasn't like that. But it's an easier Yesh Breira because it was built into the system. When I originally purchased the property with a partnership, it was built in with the understanding that you're going to use yours and I'm going to use mine. Together, collectively, we'll be able to create this mudroom so that it works for the house. But we always understood that you're going to use yours and I'm going to use mine. So therefore, that kind of yesh breira, in conclusion, the Ran says, that's why we're able to paskin like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov and say, here it's, so again, we'll stick to the basics that it's yesh breira versus ein breira. And we're going to paskin like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov that holds yesh breira, even though generally we don't paskin yesh breira. Usually we paskin ein breira. Over here, this kind of breira, since it's built into the system, and we know all along that that's the expectation of how, when I use it, that's how I'm going to be using it. I'm going to be using, when I use mine, I'm going to be using it as if it's mine. And that's the way it always was. So therefore, it's not a retroactive yesh breira. It's a now yesh breira, but that's because that's the way it was set up in the first place. Therefore, this yesh breira is going to work. Okay? So we'll stop over here.